Today on the Packet Pushers Weekly Show, SD-WAN. Oh, quit your groaning. This is not yet another SD-WAN story like you think you've heard a dozen times, because this story is from a new Packet Pusher sponsor, Ariaka. Their take on SD-WAN is rather different because to them, it's not just about using the internet as WAN and layering on policy management. Ariaka's take on how SD-WAN should be done results in a rich, nuanced offering with its own unique value. Joining us from Ariaka Networks is Dave Nudi, VP of Business Development, Ashwat Nagaraj, CTO, and Muli Radhakrishnan, Director of Product Management. These guys are some of Ariaka's big guns, and so welcome to the show, guys. And Dave, I'm going to hand off the first question to you. Well, let's just introduce Ariaka at a high level. You guys are a new sponsor. Folks maybe aren't familiar with you. In a nutshell, what service does Ariaka provide?
I appreciate it, and thanks for having us on. I've been looking forward to having the conversation. For Ariaka, we're new to a sponsor for Packet Pushers, but we're anything but new in the SD-WAN space. You can argue that we're the most experienced out of the group and have what I like to consider the most complete conversation around the enterprise WAN that's on the market today. It's a bold statement, and I'll kind of back it up with a quick overview, is that we're an SD-WAN provider that actually delivers the physical WAN on a global level. We've been on-ramping customers for a little over 7 years now to this platform with outstanding retention and results spanning all verticals and use cases. And I think the easiest way that I put it, the way I've gravitated my messaging over the years, is that when I have a conversation with one of our clients, is they need to come to grips with something that's very important. And when they do, there's a huge payoff on the back end, is that we have built a global network that is better than anything they will go and build on their own ever at any key critical differentiator point: capacity, reliability, redundancy, performance, visibility, security, all layers of the enterprise WAN across all key metrics. We have built this infrastructure. And once our client comes to grips with that reality, the big payoff is that we've built it for them and made it available on demand. So we've taken a global network, embedded it with a software stack at the foundation that manages multi-tenancy on a per customer level, as well as security on a per customer level, as well as embedded optimization and application acceleration into the footprint as well, making this as simple as on-ramping to our nearest point of presence with an internet connection at the edge, and Ariaka delivering a complete suite of managed services and application performance improvement as a managed service. This is building a VPN tunnel, putting our network in the middle, and everything else is delivered by Ariaka.
You brought up, Dave, a bunch of points that I remember from being introduced to Ariaka some years back, you know, and for a long time, I really thought of you, you're a private WAN replacement vendor. I can, you know, step away from the headaches of my big carriers, use Ariaka to build a private WAN for me, et cetera. You know, internet connection to get to you was the thing, that on-ramp part, and that's the only part that was there. And as I recall, you guys had WAN optimization, you know, right in your crosshairs. You were going after that space. Is that still a big concern, a big part of your value prop, WAN op specifically?
It is. So at the time, WAN optimization was going through a number of transitions, and we've seen the results, and the what were considered the major players in the space have certainly had to transition to become SD-WAN providers. They're all making that move, and Ariaka, in a way, was very much ahead of the curve. So in previous years, and actually that when you came up to speed with Ariaka, that was a conversation with me, Ethan, back in 2013 that you had. And we conversed over Twitter and shared some thoughts on Ariaka that many years ago around what we were doing back then. But optimization certainly is key because we solve an equal opportunity set of problems. We solve the two key characteristics that affect application performance. It's quality of connectivity, packet loss and reliability, and distance, round trip latency, how long it takes to get to. So what we've built is a platform that is agnostic to the application origin and the remote user trying to get to it. So by embedding this capability in the middle mile, it gives Ariaka a very unique opportunity to build a WAN for a client that not only covers branch office and headquarters and data center, that's easy. Anyone can do that. But we are able to on-ramp managed services, cloud, SaaS applications agnostically. And because the optimization is baked into the middle mile, not dependent upon putting boxes at the edge, I can not only deliver an O365 environment with stability through an express route, but I'm affecting connection setup time right at the edge. It's behaving like a LAN application for users in very difficult geographies across the world. We are bringing them right to the doorstep of these cloud providers and treating it like a corporate application.
So there's a key thing there. You're already pre-provisioned in Azure AWS GCP. You've got the private MPLS networks there. So if a customer wants to take advantage of that, you're right in that point already.
For years, we've been cross-connected into those environments. Yeah, okay. It's entertaining, actually, to hear companies say, hey, we're announcing cross-connects into Amazon. That's great. Where were you 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when we were already doing that?
Yeah, and that's a key differentiator between you and the others, is that ability to do the hybrid cloud or a form of hybrid cloud.
If you really had to singularize a real important point about Arjaka, is that all of our capability ultimately lives in the middle mile. There's no lack of solution providers out there that love to sell you edge hardware and point it at each other and try and resolve what happens in the middle. Mm-hmm. Arjaka solves it from the middle and then delivers that to the edge as a managed service from our nearest POP. So it takes the barriers to entry out of the way, certainly eliminates the CapEx model, eliminates a lot of management and maintenance overhead by delivering those as a managed service, and gets an IT department, whether you have 500 locations around the world or you have five. We've democratized the model by delivering it as a service instead of having those barriers to entry.
So that makes it more like, I'm just trying to conceptualize the business relationship here for people. In a sense, sometimes there's two ways of doing SD-WAN, or it seems to be two very differentiated approaches. One is you get boxes and you deploy them in, replace your routers, and then you use whatever WAN bandwidth you choose, whether it's public or private WAN. That seems to be a group of companies around that. And then Arjaka is more in the, we are going to provide you with a managed WAN, and what we've done is we're going to get you just to connect the last mile, and then we have a backbone around the world that transports the traffic back, so we can actually provide you with much more of a managed service type of a capability compared to the others. Is that a fair encapsulation?
See, I'd like to go back a little bit into the history of Arjaka. So when we started in 2009, MPLS, we realized, is actually a really great product. It provides stability, guaranteed latency, and basically it kicks butt over internet when you really look at packet loss and stuff like that, right? What it lacked was two pieces. One was solved by WAN optimization, that is mitigation of latency. As globalization happened, latency was a problem. LAN applications started getting access internationally, right? Now, the second big problem that MPLS faced was lack of flexibility. Your last mile was locked in. You wanted to move across the street, you waited 6 months to get a new circuit. You wanted to use a cloud application, you're sitting in Shanghai, Office 365, I'll use that as an example, maybe Salesforce, whatever, became inaccessible over the internet, so you ended up trying to backhaul, and then sometimes you don't want a website which you're accessing in English when you speak Chinese, right? So there's all sorts of problems that the last mile caused with MPLS. What we said is, what if we could bring MPLS quality and reliability to a point near you? So we've built a set of points of presence around the world. And at these points of presence, we run software. That is why we call it software defined. There's a centralized control, all that stuff. But essentially, we move that junction box to being at your edge, from being at your edge to a POP within 10 to 20 milliseconds of your office. And that's how we've located our POPs. So now we broke it up into a last mile, which is over the internet. And you brought up this question here, hey, what happens? There's internet is still a problem with the last mile. So we decoupled the two by putting a box. And what does the box do? It says basically get all your traffic into our POPs.
Right.
And it does an optimization of the last mile.
So instead of trying to get MPLS provider to talk to MPLS provider to talk to MPLS provider to bring a tail circuit into your site in Singapore, Hong Kong, you know, wherever it is, you can now just go to your local provider and say, I want a tail circuit from here to here. Please just give me one. And then it's all done. You don't need to deal with a centralized MPLS provider who really, you know, these carriers struggle to talk to each other and struggle to organize business. Why do you only have one billing point? Is it not better to distribute the billing? So there's a couple of different points inside of there, but I hope you get my point.
Yeah, that too. You know, so but basically we're saying, hey, you know, you've already got an internet circuit because you need an internet circuit to access the internet, which everybody needs globally. So use the same circuit, but we'll put a POP near you. And preferably, because all our points of presence have multiple local ISPs, you'll be on the same provider. So you're now on a
non-PLS. And then this comes back to the point that the internet is optimized. It's not the fastest or the best. It, like paths from point to point across the world or even in country, the path that internet traffic goes isn't the fastest path or the best path. It's just a path.
Yes.
And that's part of your acceleration story was we can provide an optimized path between two endpoints because we know what the internet looks like and we've built POPs and capabilities in the backhaul to take away the bad parts of the internet.
Exactly. We just remove those segments where basically lots of peering occurs and so on and you have lots of packet loss. And we put an optimization inside the POPs so that you decouple the latency from the application.
Yeah. Well, once you've got it in your network, once you're terminating it on your device, you can start to do acceleration, some form of WAN acceleration, protocol acceleration, whatever it might be, because you've got the traffic under control at that point, your control, and it's very easy to do.
And monitor and all that stuff. So, you know, Dave, you want to add something to that?
Well, I think the key thing when it comes to MPLS and private link connectivity is I don't know a single enterprise that actually wants MPLS. They don't want it, okay? If you can separate the characteristics of that type of connectivity away from what it happens to be called, what they really want, they want stable latency, they want prioritization, they want guaranteed bandwidth, and those are the exact same characteristics that we deliver across the backbone of our network, but we take away the pain of having to deal with, to Ashwath's point, months of deployment and chasing telco providers and bridging multiple providers. We've already done all of that for you, and then enhance the connectivity with embedded optimization in the network. This is consumption versus construction. I mean, it is impossible to build an argument that says I'm better off to go and build my own network and deploy my own technology when this has been pre-built for you that you can on-ramp using the internet connectivity that you already have and need to get to that environment for the application traffic that you need to route over that type of a solution.
But it's that, you know, guys, though, it's that middle part, your private WAN that scares me. Not from a technology perspective, but from a pricing and expense perspective. And the context is this. A lot of the SD-WAN providers that are out there brag about you get big ROI because you can retire your private MPLS and you can run it all over public internet circuits. Now, some of that messaging has kind of died off because I think a lot of people know the equation isn't quite so simple. But even so, I mean, you guys are selling. We've made a big deal up front here about your private WAN, what you've got going in the middle, that global network that you've built. I mean, what is your response to the SD-WAN perspective of ROI with cheap internet circuits?
If you actually go to these customers who are actually using, I think your point number four actually brings up a lot of the specific problems regional SD-WANs face. Regionally, they're okay. What happens is when you have an application that's traversing continents, the internet just does not work. I mean, latencies, packet loss, and so on kill the application performance. And a lot of our customers actually who probably got a Cisco DMVPN regionally, which works fine within the US, within Europe, actually use Ariaka for all their main sites internationally. So globally speaking, the private WAN is a huge differentiator. The important thing is we are able to provide a private WAN to all locations where most businesses have offices, right? As opposed to going to three providers and then being your own service provider, doing NNIs inside your data centers and inside your branch offices, we just brought it to a point near you. So actually, we think that the private WAN is actually a huge differentiator, and people we've seen are willing to pay for it. So ROI is not just about cost, but ROI is also about application productivity. And that's where the private WAN and the WAN optimization kicks in.
Yeah, one thing that I'll add on as well is in over my 5 or so years and the thousands of enterprises that I've talked to you about these types of transitions, not once have I worked with a client and the decision point came between choosing Ariaka or choosing one of the many internet-based SD-WAN providers, it's a totally different use case, totally different set of criteria and business objectives at the end of those implementations. They're just, if anything, I suppose in the future there could be a model for a hybrid of some kind, but not once have we finished an engagement with a client where they were deciding between Arriaca and one of the many internet-based SD-WAN providers. It's just a very different use case and the problems that we solve.
So really the point you're making there is that SD-WAN has got a big enough umbrella to include you guys and then include other people that we've been traditionally associating with SD-WAN that maybe aren't direct competitors.
Maybe one thing there we should bring up is we predated the term SD-WAN.
Yes.
We solved a certain problem. And really, I think SD-WAN is actually a misnomer in a lot of ways. It's the only thing that, you know, SD-WAN does not have a WAN. There's no WAN in it. It's just saying you can use the internet.
Okay, let's talk about getting connected to the Arriaca network then. Let's move it from what you guys do and get into a bit of how you do it. I'm an Arriaca customer. How am I going to connect to your private WAN and then connect your network to mine? In other words, my internal network. So you've mentioned a box. So tell me about the box.
All right. So actually, you know, I'll first abstract it away from a box. And conceptually, a customer constructs an IPsec tunnel to our POP, to our nearest POP, right? And potentially multiple such IPsec tunnels so that we can actually do redundancy, load balancing, and so on.
That POP being but typically 10 to 20 milliseconds away.
Typically, actually, it'll be 3 to 15, but I'd say that up to about 50 milliseconds, we're very comfortable because the last mile optimization is able to completely cancel out the negative effects of just pure internet on the last mile. But when we ship a box, what we also do is we build in the IPsec speeds and so on so that you don't have to configure your Cisco router. Your IPsec performance is not a constraint. And the box would actually take care of the last mile optimization. And we'll go into a little bit of that, I think, down the line. What can we do in terms of making sure that the last mile packet loss, for example, we completely eliminate? We could do that by having the SD-WAN techniques that you talk about, like forward error corrections, quick recovery on TCP because the acknowledges come from the local POP, etc., right? And when we put the box, how does the customer really connect? Well, really, we work with the customer in how the box sits, which is, you know, it's not WCCP for sure. As you say, you know, it's yuck. It's pretty bad. I mean, I don't know who came up with that. It's insane. It's only Cisco that can come up with some of these. But we use routed insertions. We can be bumping the wire. We can actually be your edge device, including the firewall functionality.
So you said route as in you could announce routes to me, BGP, OSPF, that kind of thing?
So let's take the simplest case. We can do route advertisements over any protocol, but the most common use case would be BGP when you want dynamic routing or static when we're the edge device, right?
Now, sure.
BGP, yes. So at some point, though, what we find is about 90, 95% of enterprise customers actually prefer just simple static routing because the networks are fairly static, right? They use dynamic for things like AWS, Azure, where traffic is coming in. They want to be able to dynamically migrate those to different regions and so on. But inside standard networks, typically static, but BGP is the next most common one, right? Yes. So we deploy this. Essentially, we would be on a sort of like a one-arm router sitting off your, let's say you had a Palo Alto firewall at your edge, right? So we'd announce the routes to the Palo Alto that belong to the remote sites. That traffic comes into Arriaca, into our device that we call the ANAP. The ANAP then optimizes it, which means it actually passes that traffic through a TCP stack, et cetera, does data deduplication, which is actually a significant value add on the last mile, encrypts that traffic and sends it to our point of presence. At the POP, really, what's a POP? A stack of servers, switches below that. And when it reaches the server, we're really, you know, these terms called containers, NFV, all of this stuff, these are native to our product. And we have a bunch of patents in that space. Fundamentally, the concept of virtualizing using containers and an NFV, if you will, inside those containers to say what services does this customer need or has subscribed for. So this IPsec tunnel connects into the container, and that container then decrypts, optimizes, re-encrypts this traffic into our core network, which is, again, a layer two circuit between the points of presence, so there's no packet loss. We can do optimization on that last mile and then out to the other side and reverse the whole thing back.
So the NFV bits that you were talking about is really operates more like a traditional telco, where depending on what services the customer has ordered, when it arrives at your POP, then it may need to pass through some sort of an NFV stack, which is nothing that the customer is going to see or deal with, but it's services that they've contracted for that are interesting to them that you're providing.
Yes, except that some of these components will actually be distributed in the sense that, let me take SSL proxies, right? We would actually be able to push information to the ANAP, so even the last mile is optimized, right? So the NFV configuration is through a centralized portal that we have and so on and so forth, but it actually does get distributed to both the point of presence and the ANAP. So the ANAP is like a mini POP as far as the customer is concerned. He's not really involved in managing the device, right? They manage the next device, right?
Yeah, I follow you, right. So the ANAP, again, that's the Arriaca Network Access Point, if I remember my acronym right from reading up on this. That's the box that's sitting in my data center. And right, so you may push NFV functionality into that box. But again, as the customer, I don't actually have to care too much in that you as Arriaca are managing that box for me. So it sounds like I, as the end customer, don't interact with the ANAP at all.
So this, I'll give you two models. I'd say 95% of our customers use that model. There's another 5% who can go into our portals and provision it. But the provisioning would happen then, you know, let's say they wanted to update some QoS policy, right? They can do that. When they do that, that would get pushed automatically into all the nodes of their of their network, of their virtual network. And they're effectively managing it. But you will find that 95% would rather get information on issues and leave a lot of the management out. And they, you know, they've got other things to do. They're doing business decisions in certain areas, like what applications to move to the cloud, for example.
Okay. So another deployment question then. You mentioned a scenario where the ANAP is sitting one-armed off of a firewall and traffic gets routed to it that way, and then it stands up a tunnel that goes right back out and heads off to the POP. So is there a scenario where I would actually terminate circuits on the ANAP, or is the circuit termination always going to be upstream and then you just do the IPsec overlay?
Yeah, you know, I think I sort of understated the options that we have with the box. So one of them is, and I'd say, today, it's getting to be more and more common. The box sits at the edge, essentially replaces your local ASA, your local routing. Mm-hmm. Typically, in a small branch to mid-sized branch, the internet terminates. And by internet, we typically recommend to a customer to have a minimum of two ISPs. Our POPs would have multiple ISPs. So ideally, we'd have the same two ISPs that every site has. And those two ISPs would be going ISP1 to ISP1, ISP2 to ISP2, so that it's non-peering on the last mile and reduces impact of packet loss, also simplifies escalation process. And the box would then directly support split internet edge. It does terminate internet, but you know, it supports split internet edge and optimization for the traffic that goes on the VPN. You can select what applications go over the internet. You can also do things like load balance across the links and so on with that.
You said two internet connections there. No reason why you couldn't have three, four, five if that was your particular pain point. Is there a threshold there that makes sense?
Well, the threshold for us primarily is that, you know, in this kind of an environment, two is what our box has as ports, mm-hmm. right? Now, mm-hmm. beyond that, you can have as many as you want, right? And typically, you know, going a little further out, you know, you could have more boxes so that you could increase your hardware redundancy, more access to POPs and so on and so forth. But we don't really have a problem with more. What we've seen practically is two. Is the
two
most
is enough
common.
For most people, yeah. Some people are starting to look at 3G or 4G, 5G as a backup for landlines, like DSLs and stuff for internet. So yes. That's just why, and sometimes it can be handy to have a 5G, 4G connection while the office is being set up and the DSLs get provisioned a few weeks later, sometimes.
Most common use case. I mean, especially in the remote locations, I think I'd say that a lot of the large corporations have one DSL connection and one LTE so that they don't have, you know, usually there's only one local provider They may be branded differently, but there's one ISP, and then there's LTE. Yes.
Right. So geographically, what you're saying is there's only one cabling plant, and they're often there's a monopoly carrier, or they might have a couple of different people offering services, but the same the underlying infrastructure all comes from the same company.
Molly, anything to add to that? Because I mean, you've seen a lot of the SPD and so on deployments. So.
Yeah. So what I wanted to add, Ethan and Greg, is we optionally allow the customers to bring their own device and connect into our network. So you guys did touch upon the point how to connect the device if there are shipping lead times, in infrastructures where you cannot put a device, we allow that flexibility to our customers. They can actually nail up an IPsec tunnel directly from their existing firewall. So it makes the service very flexible.
Is there a place where that makes sense, Mooli, where given a choice between ANAP and my own router would be a better choice?
If the customer can generally take an ANAP, they take it, right? I know there's no reason for them from a flexibility standpoint, manageability standpoint, from a feature set standpoint. It's got a very rich feature set, right? The only reason they would not be able to take it is, let's say they are in a location where they cannot physically deploy a box. They don't have control over that location, right? So those are the
another.
And
Mooli, with the other case, I think that makes a lot of sense is, if you're in a data center and you're doing a cross-connect, and you'll be surprised, there's about 3% of our customers who have data centers who use Equinix data centers, the same data centers we do. So they just do a cross-connect. And at that point, you have a perfect link. So a router would do fine. I mean, WAN optimization for a 150 microsecond latency is not a huge value add with unlimited amount of bandwidth. Zero loss, right? So that's a very classic. And the other one, of course, is if you're going into Azure and so on and so forth, you got a private link to the from our instance in our Equinix data center across Express Route. Would you really want to deploy an ANAP? No.
Ashworth Bridge is an important point that I want to circle back to really quickly here. This is critically important on the ANAP to the points that they're making is that it is optional. And the reason why that is important is because we're normally to optimize to do data dedup compression and that type of benefit, two devices need to see each other on either end of the chain. Where Ariaka is unique is that you can deploy the ANAP at one location and have our POP at the opposite end of the exchange as the mirror to the device and deliver last mile benefit to the location that has the ANAP without deploying any technology on the opposite end. And where that is so important is the ability to on-ramp, to Ashworth's point, cloud and SaaS environments and accelerate and data dedupe and compress and optimize those applications without having to put any gear or any type of device in the application origin side because our POP becomes the mirror. And so now the flexibility for the network manager, whether they have just a difficult site and they don't want to ship a device for whatever reason, or whether they're expecting to have a trade-off in performance by migrating to the cloud or going to a SaaS environment that they previously didn't have to suffer when they were hosting it in their own data center, we eliminate the compromise now. Put us in the path, and you're still fully optimizing without having to do anything on the application origin, which is entirely unique to what Ariaka does. It really comes down to cloud enablement. Many of the customers that we work with, it's a joint decision that we are ready to migrate from the data center to AWS and Azure and managed services to those locations. And at the exact same time, Ariaka is the global network to get us there because we don't have a fall off on performance and visibility and delivering user experience to our edge users because that is baked into the network itself. It solves that problem fundamentally for a global user base coming into centralized application origins.
Okay, a few more ANAP questions that I'm curious about. One, we were talking about circuits and terminating them, and you guys made the point you can use the ANAP as an internet gateway, even a firewall replacement. It can be your edge device for some branches. Okay, can I only terminate Ethernet circuits on an ANAP, or can I do TDM circuits as well?
Today, we only support Ethernet as the port of choice. Typically, you have a modem in front of us, and then you connect the Ethernet port in. But keep in mind, as we talk about TDM, as we move to VoIP, the technologies that we do include actually fairly comprehensive, this comes in the class of SmartLink, ability to do packet loss recovery across the last mile. Keep in mind, we have a unique advantage which nobody else has. That is, our POP is 10 milliseconds away, right? So we have the ability to recover the loss with just an addition of a 10 millisecond jitter, even for UDP traffic. That's patented. But basically, if I went and bought a device from one of the older, let's say the Thalaris of the world, right? And, you know, can you really handle voice? No, because the jitter that you know, two different parts gives you, you know, the choice of two different parts is quite high. One might be 100 millisecond parts and one is 700 milliseconds, right? We are able to solve that issue. So just to go back to that VoIP, yes, we do a lot, but TDM, we actually don't terminate.
Okay, fair enough. Boy, 700 milliseconds, I hope we don't see that on terrestrial lines very often. Jeez.
Well, let me tell you, if you go to China and you see the when the load picks up on internet, you start seeing huge latencies. I mean, it's not, I wouldn't call it load on the internet. It's probably a firewall somewhere in a government box, but it does happen, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So those are the challenges we're talking about.
So, right? You know what, Greg and Ethan, you know, it's so funny that you mentioned about 700 milliseconds. I've had a customer come to me, their office in China, and they actually literally asked me this question. I see a 40% packet drop and 1 second latency. Am I being attacked? So it's kind of so funny, right? So I told them, no, I don't think so. It's just how the internet works there. So it was, I've had really funny questions around how the internet works. So it's interesting to know about all these aspects.
ANAP and HA. I don't want my ANAP edge device to be a SPOF. Is there an HA option?
Oh, yeah. Let me actually go with it. We have a suite of it, right? So the first level is you could be doing what we call VARP, V-A-R-P, but it's really a modification of VRRP, where you have two ANAPs effectively doing VRRP with a router behind and connected through multiple internet connections to one POP. Then you can do that and extend that and say, I need to have two POPs for redundancy. Because by the way, all our POPs, every machine on it is fully redundant. But we could say, all right, I've got two internet connections, I got two ANAPs, one ANAP talks to one POP over two internet connections. Another ANAP talks to another POP over two internet connections. So we can do what really is more like a dual hub, dual cloud DMVPN, if you will, with a backdoor between data centers. We have all those levels of redundancy.
And that would be, those would all be active circuits as well.
Yes, active circuits. When we have two links on the internet, they're both active. You put in two ANAPs, you can make them both active.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Or you can choose, as I said, the first and the simplest one is you have a hot standby ANAP where you have two internet circuits. The two internet circuits are connected to both ANAPs, but the ANAPs sort of talk to each other and say, who's the master? Because at that point, the highest failure probability is actually one of the internet circuits, not the ANAPs.
An ANAP, yeah. Hmm. And this comes down to selecting your points of fragility correctly. There's no need to make complexity. Just choose the simple option for the majority of cases.
Right.
It's better than getting... I mean, I'm sure you've got customers who've got weird requirements and having active-active makes sense. But as a general rule, it's always better to have your packets flowing down the same path because the buffers and everything in the path is able to process the packets correctly. Yes.
Yep.
So you don't really want to be doing active-active. Sometimes it's just better overall to keep it active standby. Yep.
When it comes to single points of failure, Ariaka is designed for redundancy end-to-end at every single point. So if there ever is a SPOF in the path, it's by customer design choice to have it there. But baseline within our service is absolute redundancy, you know, from edge to edge, monitoring of that from edge to edge. So, that's something that we took very seriously. It's a integral part of the conversation from day one. And
well, I guess if customers want more information about that, they can contact you and then argue over the details there. And
yeah,
it sounds to me like you've got all these things covered. So if somebody's got more information, they should reach out and start getting into the nitty-gritty details. Because there's a few more things we want to cover in today's show to make sure we get those key points across. So I just want to hustle along.
You bet.
One of those things is monitoring. So I've got this Ariaka network. I've got my ANAPs deployed or however I decided to on-ramp to the various POPs. Can I tell what's going on in the middle? Or is Ariaka kind of a big, you know, cloud to me that I send stuff in and it pops out the other side magically?
So you know what? Actually, I think we probably should spend a lot of time on this section. A lot of our intellectual property is really associated with end-to-end visibility. end-to-end visibility. Now, the customer has that visibility. It's not necessarily something that the customer has to eyeball 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because we do have mechanisms by which we can tell the customer we will offload their service provider overhead. Let's say there's packet loss on a particular link. We will take care of the escalation. But they have visibility into all of that. We have automated systems where they can say, you know what, send me an email in the event that I have so much packet loss for, let's say, 10 minutes at this link, so I know about it. So all the way from operational visibility to performance visibility. What's my traffic? What's my traffic mix? Do I really need to start increasing the link capacity in certain areas? Do you need to reduce bandwidth subscription in certain areas? Because all of these are just dials for us, right? They can just say, hey, look, 20 megabits, too much in this space, and reduce it to 10. Go from 10 to 100 megabits in this location because I'm starting to see a lot more traffic in that space. That level of visibility by application is available.
I mean, visibility for us is, it's a third leg of the stool. It's as important as the core network, as important as the intelligence stack built in, because so much of our story is built around the agility that we provide, turning up an international link same day rather than months, and scaling bandwidth in real time. And if you're not turning around the real time information and data to the network manager to help drive those decisions, then all that agility is worthless. I have to know what's happening to be able to scale these things in real time. And you know, it allows us to, we take the mystery out of it entirely. And so we have a really unfair advantage by providing the middle mile connectivity and the application layer acceleration, that the visibility that we provide integrates all of that at the foundation. So it is as complete a visibility tool that's just been built up based upon customers over, you know, 7-8 years telling us what they want to see on the network. And all of that lead time has already been built into the tool, and you need an internet browser. You can sit in a coffee shop.
Yeah, you just answered my next question, which was, so it sounds like you built some sort of a dashboard or an interface that I access to deal with this. So I fire up a browser. I can monitor my Arriaca WAN that way with all of the metrics that you've pulled in and everything you've built based on customer feedback over the years to give everybody what they're looking for.
Very important thing is it includes analytics, scanned analytics. You can actually say, what are my top servers, my top clients? What's the top ports that are getting used? There's predefined analytics. Plus, you can actually pipe in your own, you could have your own SolarWinds box at the back, for example, and then get NetFlow V9 from us, and you can have syslogs going to your collectors on your locations. So all of these, which would have been considered standard. Remember, we've had a lot of time to work on a lot of this stuff. So, you know, many of our customers have brought up all of these requirements. So our goal is really, there's only one box at the customer edge at some point. All the functionality the customer needs on that site is available through us.
All right, I want to move the conversation along to application classification. So typically when we talk about SD-WAN, one of the things you're getting is the ability to say, this kind of an application, say voice, needs to have this sort of performance across the WAN, low jitter and low latency, and this other kind of application, et cetera. You get the idea. Do I have that ability with Arriaca to classify traffic by app and then through some sort of a policy manager, I'm going to guess, instruct the system what sort of delivery that application needs?
So the short answer to that is yes. Long answer is we've got the most comprehensive QoS solution into it. And actually, this is something we can spend a whole hour on. We've got a unique difference. It's because we're a multi-segment architecture. Just take a simple example where you have 50 sites all trying to talk to one hub, right? And there's definitely going to be oversubscription. People don't want to say, I've got 2 megabit sites and then I'm going to have, 100 megabit hub. It's just not worth it because the utilization is going to be 10% then. We try to get the utilization to 90%. Oversubscribe as you please. Why? Because we have all the buffering and TCP terminations inside the POP. So when a 2 megabit site, when all the 2 megabit sites are sending to this 100 megabit site, they all send it 2 megabits until the other site tells them, hey, slow down, because the total available bandwidth at this time at the edge is now, because 25 people are talking at the same time on a 10 megabit link, it's dropped down to maybe a megabit each, right? So that's real-time signaling that we do is all proprietary to us. It's it's sort of extension.
I was just going to say, you guys are actually have the ability to work some magic there, which goes back to the WANOP capabilities as well. Yes. Because you're seeing all the flows, you can take the flows in aggregate, analyze what's going on, and then prioritize specific flows that way with end-to-end awareness, you know, between sender, the ANAP at the edge, if you will, and the POP, and then control the delivery order in that sense, as opposed to traditional QoS, which is more or less who's going out the door first now that we've got queuing going on in a buffer and some policy that's more or less blindly is sending traffic out the door, you know, in preferential order. This is more, again, it's proprietary, but it is part of the magic.
Bingo.
Yep. Exactly.
That's bingo. I mean, that is, you know, that's it, because we can use all these nodes. And in terms of the classification mechanisms, old school is available. We can,
like, if I send you DSCP, something marked DSCP, you'll deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah, we divide that, for example, into both. We call it as, you can honor your marks, or we can also do marking. How do we do marking? We can do marking by traditional ACL-like five tuples. We can actually do by application. What's an application height? It could be a port range of a UDP port range, or it could be a DNS or a reference, right? You could say, hey, you know what, take my SharePoint.office365.com traffic and use this class. Maybe it's a real-time class, or maybe it's a very high priority of some other kind, right? Mission critical.
This is actually a really key point here, because it's not simply identifying applications by port number, which doesn't really zoom in all that well, especially when all the traffic is HTTP or HTTPS. You've got all these other mechanisms to correctly look up what the app is and make inferences about what's going on there.
You're right. And you know what? Because we have SaaS, cloud application, let's say an Office 365 link, as one of the key differentiators, a lot of our routing inside our network is actually done by applications. And again, some of this stuff is all in process of filing of various claims and so on. But because we are sort of application-oriented, now, we're not just saying, hey, you know, pick this link because it's this application. No, we're actually saying your SharePoint data is hosted in Dallas, and the customer, your user, is in Shanghai. It's going to go through our network to our Dallas POP. We don't even have an office in Dallas, but it goes to our Dallas POP, goes potentially across an Azure Express Route link, or goes directly through a virtual firewall to your data center, to the Microsoft data center holding SharePoint. That routing, it's not the IP address that came out was something else, right? We actually have to go take the traffic there, re-resolve it to the data center that's local. So application is sort of the underlying classification inside our network. Now, today, yes, SD-WAN uses application as a sort of differentiator, but someone will look at it and say, look, I mean, that's table stakes. It's not so much a differentiator.
Okay. All right, mobile users. This is usually where things fall down, because mobile users are outside the scope of the SD-WAN domain. And so, yeah, there's not much you can do for them. But as I understand it, you guys do have some sort of mobile user solution.
The simplest model is customers use their own standard security gateway, if you will. Let's say they have a Palo Alto VPN gateway. What we do is we accelerate the connectivity to that gateway. A user in Shanghai could be going via our POP through our core network, through your gateway in Singapore, through a POP in Singapore, out into your gateway in Singapore. That's one. And we're just in the process of introducing our own gateway that would actually be distributed around the world, so you could actually be authenticated and enter your private network at the nearest POP.
I was just going to say, if you've got software in those POPs, why aren't you just terminating my VPN for me and then connecting me to the WAN at the edge of the network?
Simple answer is, different customers have different security models.
Yes.
So if a customer is a Palo Alto customer, yes, we can host your Palo Alto at your nearest AWS, but that's not something they choose to deploy all the time. So it's much more of a security.
So there's some interesting flexibility that comes out of that. You could actually start saying, I could put my VPN concentrator in data center A, and then the traffic goes into the VPN concentrator, gets terminated, expected, authenticated, blah, blah, blah. And then you can then pass it back into the Ariaka network to then backhaul it to the data center, which may not actually be where the VPN concentrator is.
Absolutely.
So you can say, I can access the high user comes in, connects via Ariaka to the VPN concentrator in the data center. Data center does user auth, inspection, logging, blah, blah, blah. Then you send it back out over the Ariaka network to, say, Office 365 in Azure or wherever, and so on and so forth.
Very common use case. Most common use case.
And the remote user, I mean, talk about a point of frustration, is that as applications have moved to the public WAN and internet-facing applications, that's a big part of the fuel of the remote user. It's, you know, small office, home office, and coffee shops and hotels now accessing those applications when they're on the road. And for the enterprise, you know, they've tried to bolt on, you know, regional VPN concentrators to deal with users within various regions. So in APAC, I need a concentrator in Singapore. In North America, I need one in my data center here. I need one in Ireland for EMEA. Because what we do is transparent to those remote users and the network is TCP optimized, we actually give our customers now the ability to collapse that into a single VPN concentrator for the entirety of their remote global users. Because dynamically, we're steering them onto our network at the nearest point of presence and TCP optimizing the connection. So now that need to have distributed environment around, and again, to Ashwath's point, it depends upon the security policy, but generally, you know, that conversation of collapsing infrastructure to a more centralized strategy by having an optimized path to get to it is a massive return on investment that we're able to, it's just, you get to have a, you know, for lack of a better phrase I've used over years, a holy shit moment you can bleep that later if you'd like. for our customers, when they really kind of come to grips with what this core network is and what it enables, it's the ultimate playground of connectivity with all the knobs and the switches built into the middle mile.
There's a whole pile of design options that suddenly start to string out of this if you think carefully or more flexibly than you normally do. You don't have to put VPN concentrators, you know, whether they're Palo Alto or whoever your favorite vendor is, all over the world to terminate locally so the traffic doesn't loop around. All of a sudden, you could start to think to yourself, well, because Ariaka is accelerating the traffic and solving my WAN problems to a greater or lesser extent, I can now start just have my VPN termination point somewhere else in the world, and it shouldn't make too much difference to the user experience. And all of a sudden, I've just halved the cost of my VPN concentrator products or my VPN.
You're spot on, Greg. No matter where the user is, they should have an equivalent user experience. So if the application's on the West Coast, somebody in New York, somebody in London, somebody in Singapore, somebody in Shanghai should feel a very similar user experience. The before and after will be a big difference with greater distance, but it should be a similar and a very good user experience for all the users regardless.
Oh, I don't want a good user. I don't want a good experience for the users, especially the CEO. There's one thing I've discovered.
The CEO gets an ANAP at his
20 years of experience knows never give the CEO the best level of service. Give them the least level of service. And then the CEO will go, why is the network so bad? And he say, well, that's what everybody's getting. And the CEO says, well, we need to increase the funding for that. There has to be the CEO mode is to give them the least level of service.
Did you learn that Nitel class, Greg? That's pretty
good. Dave, that's a new sales approach.
I love talking to network guys about the CEO sitting on a plane reading the airline magazine about some great networking strategy and then throwing it on their desk when they return to the office. And why aren't we doing this?
Yeah.
And just blindsiding them.
While we're talking about smart mobility, you know, I thought I'll just bring up an interesting use case, a real use case, so that we can even understand how this thing helped a customer is. You know, customer has partners all over the world. You know, they had people in Brazil, Europe, China, India. And you know what they tried to do? They started building VPN concentrators just for performance in different cloud data centers, put WAN optimization devices, virtual machines, and try to optimize performance. And they ultimately gave up because it didn't work. Now what they came to us, and as exactly as you mentioned, Greg, they ended up consolidating everything in the US and then used our network to deliver the VPN. So
now there's a lot of savings there, right? Incidental. Exactly. You've rolled out the Ariaka solution and you've made some savings in terms of MPLS backhaul and simplified the operations. You've got some monitoring and visibility into your network as part of the Ariaka solution. Okay. You're already on a hiding to nothing. And the ability to pull out, well, the cost of VPN concentrators is, let's say, very generous for the VPN concentrator companies. And so pulling them out and reducing the number of those is actually, there's a substantial ROI there.
Exactly. And you know, the person we actually talked to, he manages entire infrastructure. He said, you know, you help me solve my management from 10 devices to just one. So that was his statement, right? So and he said, I'm the only guy, you know, and I keep getting called at different time zones.
All right, guys, I got a couple more nerd questions for you. As we're winding this podcast down. One is multicast traffic. We have some listeners who operate sizable multicast networks. Can they deal with that if they were Arriaca customers?
We support GRE tunnels going through our network end to end. You can send your multicast traffic inside the GRE. In addition, we can actually optimize all the unicast traffic that actually flows inside our GRE tunnel. So one of our common insertion models where people do this is that, you know, let's say they have Cisco ISRs at various points. They actually have created a mesh of GRE tunnels for their multicast. And we're able to optimize their non-multicast traffic from within the GRE tunnel, right? So, but we don't directly handle multicast traffic, as in we don't replicate the multicast traffic ourselves. Not yet.
Got it. That's fair, though. I mean, you know how to deal with this problem. There's a solution you can recommend for customers to do that, and that is GRE. So there's some complexity to it, but it's a solution that can be dealt with. All right, one more nerd question, IPv6. So two things. Can I manage the platform with IPv6, or would I even need to? And then can I forward IPv6 through the platform?
So this is an area where, you know, I think Dave can give you some insight on what we've been watching IPv6 for a long time. What we actually do today and we test for is to make sure that when IPv6 is transported over V4 GRE tunnel, it works seamlessly through our network. So everything else works well with that, which includes our smart link functionality, replication, forward error correction, and so on. Actual optimization like TCP termination of IPv6, IPsec termination of IPv6 and so on are slated for later in this year. End of this year, more likely. But Dave, I think you can give a business perspective on this.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a unique perspective when it comes to the demand for services such as IPv6. Because we have hundreds of enterprise networks, you know, currently up and running on Arriaca, and visibility into application mix and transport protocols that are moving across and are just constantly engaged. We're an extension of their teams that when it is truly relevant and the demand is like Arriaca will be there and we will be supporting, you know, IPv6. But this is something that we consistently, through a client advisory board, we're always pinging our customers and making sure that we're on the front end of, you know, those kind of capabilities. So
I get what you're saying. In other words, because you're dealing with a lot of enterprise customers at the moment, you haven't been getting so much demand that it's been, you know, like, oh, we've got to have IPv6. So it's not there yet, but it is coming. You are working on it. That is, I'm going to be able to hand native IPv6 packets and have all the magical Arriaca treatment of those like I have with IPv4 today. That is coming. It's just it's not there yet because people haven't been demanding it at this point. Fair enough.
Right.
The last thing that we would all want to understand is how is this thing licensed? Or, I mean, am I buying an ANAP and then I own it? Is there a subscription model? Am I buying circuits from Arriaca? Or, again, is it just, it's my internet circuit that I've already got, so, you know, you guys aren't in the circuit business at all? You know, talk to us about that.
So, you know, let me start with that. I think we'll go into the business side of it with Dave. This is actually a very key point about Arriaca. We don't sell anybody anything. Everything is in OPEX model, in the sense that you're paying a monthly service charge. We sell exactly like MPLS used to sell, because when you really go to some of these customers, they want to pay a fixed monthly charge based on the subscription levels at each of these locations and the services they add. For example, they can say, I add Office 365. How much does that charge extra over my VPN, right? Now, we also support last mile procurement and monitoring. Why did we do that? Because if you actually convert, if you go to a customer, large customer, Stanley Black & Decker, somebody with 500 sites, right, and wants to have their MPLS replaced by Arriaca, which is one of the many customers who have done that with us, 100% of their sites. The issue is that they don't want to also have to deal with 500 contracts for internet connections in 500 locations, right? So we actually do procure and become a one-stop shop for their internet. And they don't want to have 500 people, one in each place, being able to call up the local ISP. So we do the since our device, by the way, is completely energized when you put our device in, it's monitoring end-to-end all the time, last mile, packet loss, everything. We also at a charge, at a service charge, we do the escalations. We'll create the ticket for the customers on the customer's behalf, work with the provider to get that resolved. So that also is a service. So everything we do is a service. It's a fully managed service in the sense that we take ownership for your essentially end-to-end uptime and your application performance. But we can give you back the control with monitoring and so on and so forth for various things. Like, for example, we can send you an alert whenever there's an issue with a specific link in a specific location, and you're welcome to go ahead and escalate it with your own provider. You can bring your own internet circuits. We allow all of these as options, basically to ease the pain of migration from MPLS.
I did not expect that. Okay. I thought you were going to tell me, no, we don't mess with circuits. That's your problem. Just get connected to the internet and we're here at the pop high. But you'll actually go to the point of pain relief so far that we'll ease your transition, folks. We'll help you and manage all of the circuits for you. And you just end up with one big WAN bill from us, one-stop shopping.
This was carriers creating FUD and customers, married to the concept of one throat to choke and facing the specter of managing internet connections all around the world and ISPs, and that's as unappetizing as it sounds. So with our monitoring platform at the foundation, there are very few companies in a better position than Arjaka to monitor the links and take action with a local provider through a letter of authorization and Arjaka becoming that last mile procurement and management. And it just now takes our circle of service demarcation all the way to the edge. One provider, one management service, one bill, one knock, one throat to choke and deal with, that gets that last barrier out of the way and eases that transition.
Not that you have to, but yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. And, if you want.
And I think it's important to note here that, if a customer has 8 sites, it's unlikely that we can always offer to monitor and manage the last mile because that is fairly simple. Our instrumentation and automation already exists for it. So it's free to us, charge to the customer, no brainer. But when it comes to actually procuring the internet links, I would say we expect about 10% of all our sites over the year to actually have it. And they'll really be customers of bigger, somebody with 30, 25 sites or potential for 500 sites. Those are the customers who we do an all-in service.
And oftentimes it boils down to saying, just take my APAC sites for me, will you please? Because India calls me and says, Todd is having a problem. And it's the most helpless feeling in the world. I mean, what are you going to do? Yeah. Other than tell them to wait it out.
Not to mention that APAC is a very inconvenient time zone for a US
The advertisement where the bank's being robbed and the security guy's standing there. Are you going to help us? I'm a security monitor. I don't actually do anything about it. So we were sending alerts, and our customer said, can't you just do something about it instead? And link management was born as a result. And it really is a no-brainer for some of those geographies.
Yeah, it is really a problem. And also sometimes in those areas, language barriers start to become significant.
Absolutely.
As well as cultural barriers. So as somebody who worked in Australia and had to work with carriers around Oceania and Southeast Asian regions, buying circuits in certain countries where you didn't speak a language, couldn't even read it, you couldn't even guess, at least working in Europe, you can get to German or French and you can look at the words and go, I could kind of work out what's being said.
Right. But, exactly. I don't know. Yeah. You look at our core network.
Have you ever tried reading Thai? It's really a challenge, right? Yeah. If you're not...
By fundamental design, we have to buy internet all around the world. We're already doing it. Mm-hmm. So it's a very natural, and the monitoring tools, of course, at the foundation are world class. So we're built for it. It just took enough customers asking us, can't you do that for me, to get to the point where we formalize it into an SLA service that we now provide as an option, as are most things configurable to what we do to the regions where they need it.
Yeah, I think it's a couple of very important points there was language. So we do all languages. And in places like China, we actually have resident engineers for support. Because that's where we get a lot of business associated with China. And China is one of the countries which has a lot of problems with the network and issues, right? So that's one. And, I think you brought up a really, really important point when you said time zones. Many CIOs who work with us, they say, look, you know what? The best thing that has happened to me in the last 5 years, I've never been woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'll tell you what.
As somebody who worked in Australia and had to manage networks in Europe and the USA from Australia, I promise you there is nothing that guaranteed to make you more unhappy than upgrading a router in a time zone that's 12 hours away. So you're getting up at two in the, you know, I know. Yep. It is not a good day, right? And it's just not a happy experience. That, you know, getting rid of that stuff is a feature, not a bug. So.
And you know, guys, since Ashwath brought up languages, we also understand languages like C, C++, Java, Python. So I don't want you guys to think we are we also understand software. In fact, that's what we really do, right? These are all some services we are building out to just keep our customers happy, right? So we want to listen to our customers, right? But bottom line, we are a software company.
Well, guys, we've had an excellent conversation here. We understand the product and how it works, but why don't we go around the table one more time with some parting thoughts. Ashwath, starting with you.
Yeah, you know, I think that we've got to look at the philosophy here. We've built a platform, and our vision is that over time, a lot of that complexity that sits inside a customer's branch office and a large offices, data centers, over time moves into a POP near you. So the customer doesn't have to deal with lots and lots of boxes and lots of services. And these components that run in our POPs are designed to work with each other. There is another view of the world that is you buy more boxes and put a nice wrapper around it. We strongly believe that that's not the way to go in the long term.
Mm. Complexity is an ongoing challenge, and the more we abstract it in either it's getting simpler or getting more complex, I don't know, because it depends on what the product is, but that is a great point to make. Mauli, what about you? Parting thoughts.
Building upon what Ashwath was saying is it's people into Aria, looking at Ariaka are buying into a platform. They're not looking at a point service. We build a global platform. WAN services are moving into the cloud, security, WAN optimization, connectivity. So that's the trend that's happening, and we are really excited about this, right? So the SD-WAN, yes, it's a great concept, but it's ultimately going to transition into a platform more than just a box.
Mm. Yes, I see the value prop you're making because we own the network in the middle. Yes, that's our differentiator. Excellent point to make, though. Very fair. And Dave, parting thoughts from you, and if you would also let folks know how they can find out more about Ariaka and so on.
I appreciate you guys having us. Bottom line is Ariaka's built the ultimate global platform for the enterprise that's configurable to whatever it is they want to do. And every client gets to validate that and prove it out and prove a concept that we engage with the client to do that. It's try it before you buy it, and we dare you to give it a shot. But customers who want to find out more, can visit us at our website, www.ariaka.com, or follow us on Twitter at Ariaka Networks, where we provide an awful lot of updates on activities for the company.
Just on that, like literally, because everything is a service that's already running in the internet today, you can actually just go to your existing devices and point to the Ariaka network and get going. So you can actually suck it and see, you know, that try it on method, by getting in contact with you.
We've turned up a connection from Tel Aviv to Jersey in 3 hours and had 40x improvement in performance. These are things done in real time that used to take months to do. Okay. And it's a real eye-opener. It changes everything.
For sure.
Excellent. And so again, you can follow Ariaka on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook as well, if you like. And we thank them for being a Packet Pusher sponsor today, because without our sponsors, we cannot do what we do here. You can find this and many more of our fine and free technical podcasts and also our community blog, all at packetpushers.net. Follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers. You can find us on LinkedIn as well, like us on Facebook, and rate us on iTunes. And last but not least, remember that too much technology would never be enough.